Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of WrestleNomics Radio. I'm Brandon Thurston, broadcasting on demand and live on the WrestleNomics YouTube channel, where today is December 5th, 2021. Sometimes I forget to remind you of the date, but today I did not. It is December 5th, 2021, and today on the program, we will discuss WWE's new talent recruitment strategy, NIL, or maybe NIL, NIL, who knows? We will discuss that. The latest YouTube views information that we have. Google Trends, it's a new month, so a new month has passed, and we have new Google Trends information to update you on. Some live events, news, and then the main event. I have, for the first time ever, I can show you not just one data point, not just a few data points out of context, but year to date. Everyone's asking me about the DVR here and there. They do ask me sometimes, well, what about the DVR viewership? We have the DVR viewership to discuss and analyze today for all of the major nationally televised wrestling programs across all the demos and the down ballot demos, all that stuff. Road to the Top has been renewed. And we have a fast affiliate number to talk about for SmackDown. All that today on the program. But first, joining us from my immediate south, he is a ring announcer, a stand-up comedian, Chris Gullo. Welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me, as always. And it's great to be here on this Sunday morning where there's no Buffalo Bills game at all, home or away, because it's tomorrow.
No, the Bills play the Patriots tomorrow. Are you a big Patriots fan?
I think it's safe to say I am not.
You a big Bill Belichick fan? And his hoodie, his cut-off sleeves, his angry face.
It's the evil empire, they're called. Mm-hmm.
Anyway, I don't know. What do you want to talk about today?
Well, kind of want to get right into it here and the NIL, N-I-L, and kind of give a little background of that, Brandon. The NCAA name, image, and likeness rule.
Are you familiar with this already ahead of time? Yes. I'm not that familiar with that. I was hoping that you would be.
I'm very familiar with this. Yes, this has been something that has been debated about and fought for years. And it's almost like a compromise because the big push was, well, I'll explain what it is and I'll kind of give a little background. So the NCAA approves name, image, and likeness policy. So on June 30th, 2021, the Division I Board of Directors approved an interim name, image, and likeness policy. This new policy will allow all NCAA D1, D2, and D3 student athletes to be compensated for their NIL as of July 1st, 2021, regardless of whether their state has an NIL law in place or not. Now, the NCAA NIL law rules do not override state, college, university, or conference-specific NIL rules. This means student athletes need to review the NIL rules with their state where their school is located and check with the athletic department for any school and conference specific rules to understand what limitations they will have on their NIL. Now, college student athletes competing in states without an NIL law will have the freedom to receive compensation for their NIL however they see fit, as long as they do not violate pay for play or receive financial incentives to sign or remain with a program. So this is a compromise. For just to give a little background on this, it has been debated for years. Should college athletes be paid? Mm-hmm. And
what is the argument for and against? What are these competing viewpoints?
So a lot of people say, well, hey, the tuition is pay, the opportunity to be seen on national television, possibly become a professional.
You're getting an education for free.
Yes, you're getting an education for free and all that. That's the big thing. But the counterpoint is that these schools are making, and this is where it gets a little WrestleNomics-y too. These schools are making millions of dollars off TV rights. sharing with the conferences and all that, and nothing is going to those student athletes. It's paying head coaches obscene salaries. I mean, head coaches in college football make more than the NFL. But yeah, so that's been the big debate. So this is almost a compromise where student athletes can receive some type of compensation while they are still attending college and playing sports without the schools being accountable for it. So where this comes into effect is car dealerships, autograph signings, convention appearances, stuff like that. Like now we, and video games, which that was, that's what started a lot of this, was Ed O'Bannon suing the NCAA because they used his likeness in a college basketball game, but they didn't. He was like UCLA forward number, whatever. But he's like, that's me. That's my likeness. I want money.
Uh-huh.
So
this is a way for college athletes to make money, not from the college that they go to and that they play for. Tell me if I'm wrong here, but
yeah,
they can get sponsorship deals and they can get compensated for their name, image, and likeness being used. Is that correct?
So okay. This is a way they can receive income. So if I'm a quarterback at Oklahoma University, I can go do a commercial for Jim Bob's car dealership and make whatever Jim Bob's going to give me.
Okay. Jim Bob. Does he pay well? How does this relate to WWE?
Well, we'll kind of get into it here. On Thursday, December 2nd, WWE Today announced the launch of a groundbreaking name, image, and likeness program that will provide a clear pathway from college athletics to WWE. Following a historic new policy by the NCAA effective July 1st, 2021, which ushered in the NIL era, allowing college athletes the ability to monetize their name, image, and likeness, WWE has constructed a comprehensive program to recruit and develop potential future superstars. Dubbed Next in Line, the NIL program aims to enhance the talent's development process through collaborative partnerships with college athletes from diverse athletic backgrounds.
So their NIL in the normal context here that we're talking about refers to name, image, and likeness, but WWE being WWE has to rebrand it into to what again? Next in Line.
And I'm glad we're getting clarification on this because I was very confused about it when Gable Stevenson was signed under it.
Yeah.
The fact that he was on WWE contract was still allowed to be at the Minnesota Golden Gophers for another year.
Yeah. So how do you see this as clarifying that?
Well, I think this next part we're going to talk about.
Okay. In the next
page. Might clarify it a little bit. So this next part here, the WWE NIL program has the potential to be transformational for our business, said Paul Levesque, WWE Executive Vice President, Global Talent Strategy and Development. By creating partnerships with elite athletes at all levels across a wide variety of college sports, we will dramatically expand our pool of talent and create a system that readies NCAA competitors for WWE once their collegiate careers come to a close. All athletic partnerships will feature access to the state-of-the-art WWE Performance Center, Orlando, Florida, in addition to the resources across the organization, including brand building, media training, communications, live event promotion, creative writing, and community relations. Upon completion of the NIL program, select athletes may earn an exclusive opportunity to be offered a WWE contract. In September, WWE announced its first NIL deal with heavyweight freestyle wrestler Gable Stevenson, who captured a gold medal at the Tokyo Olympics. The agreement allowed Stevenson to return to the University of Minnesota for his senior season, where he is defending the NCAA national championships while beginning his superstar training with WWE. WWE will unveil the first class of NIL partnerships in the next couple weeks. So we'll get into a couple things. So what I'm taking from this, and I'll let you kind of see what you're taking. What I'm taking this is, this is almost like a, are you familiar with holding deals, Brandon?
No. What's a holding deal?
So holding deal is something that happens in media a lot, media properties. And here we are. We got Nick Khan, the man of media. Major networks like NBC, CBS, Fox will sign comedians, actors, actresses to what they call holding deals. So I'm going to pay you so much a year for 3 years to just keep the rights of you. So when we eventually develop a program for you, then we will sign a further contract and work all that out. So you can't sign with Fox or NBC if you're under a CBS holding deal and they're going to develop a sitcom for you, whatever it is. This is, I think this is a similar thing where, hey, we're going to put you in this program. And then it seems like they would sign him to holding deals like Gavin Stevenson is like, so you're allowed to, because when you're like a comedian, actor, actresses, you could pursue other work. You just can't sign a deal with like those other networks. So mm-hmm. it's like, hey, we're going to give you a holding deal. You can go still do college sports, do whatever you do, but you're coming to WWE instead of going to whatever maybe professional sport you're going to try and stuff like that. That's kind of what I take from it. I could be wrong, but that's kind of what I understand it from to be.
And I wonder what the commitment is as far as like there's, if they make deals with many people under this, you know, whatever it is, policy or whatever it is, there's probably going to be people who never end up doing much with WWE. So I wonder what they're paying to hold on to these people relative to what they would pay them when they become active wrestlers for them. But it's very much in line with the new NXT, the things that are apparent from NXT 2.0 and a lot of the talent releases. By the way, how will independent wrestlers benefit from the NIL, the next in line thing?
They won't benefit on a WWE level. They'll now know that maybe they should pursue other avenues.
Yes. As JR would always say, you got to have a plan B. But I think it's, I'm intrigued to see who WWE signs going forward. I really think that I will be surprised if WWE signs much of any independent wrestling talent for the foreseeable future. Things can always change and the pendulum can always swing back. They were clearly in the mid-2000s. They had a philosophy more in line with this current philosophy. And then the pendulum swung back to the other extreme in the mid-2010s under Triple H. And now it's swinging back in that other direction of valuing athletes and people who don't have a wrestling background, a pro wrestling background to begin with. Obviously, Gable Stevenson has an amateur wrestling background. But I will be surprised if we haven't seen any signings of wrestlers since NXT 2.0 was launched in September, right? We're now in early December. WWE has been signing before. This has been signing people pretty rapidly. What's the next WWE Performance Center class look like? Is it just all people like this who are signed through this program? It's in line with something that's probably an easy sell to Vince and something that seems to be compatible with Nick Khan's background as a talent agent. And it's, so what I mean by the Vince part is that this creates a world in which WWE is above wrestling. But I'll be surprised to see if any independent wrestling talent gets signed by WWE going forward. So is all that talent just going to be available to AEW and to everybody else in the wrestling industry? I could see WWE signing some wrestlers who don't have much of any indie buzz, but they have the attributes that this version of WWE developmental values, that is being tall and maybe having an athletic background as well. It'll be interesting.
I think the second generation stuff is still a factor. We see it with Von Wagner and Bron Breakker.
Who's Von Wagner related to?
That's a Wayne Bloom's kid.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Mm-hmm. And I'm trying to think of his name. The guy that teams with Josh Briggs. I don't know why I can't think of his name right now. Bobby Cannon's kid.
Okay.
So
maybe WWE should introduce a program where current talent can sign away the rights of their descendants for the foreseeable future. Maybe something they want to look into. But also notable here is that Triple H. I don't know if I would call this a public appearance, but these are public comments for the first time since his cardiac event, since the downfall of Black and Gold NXT. But he also gave some comments to the outlet Fast Company, which was covering this WWE NIL. Is it NIL or NIL? We've only seen this in print, not in audio.
I would hope it's NIL. Paul Levesque, WWE's Executive Vice President of Global Talent Strategy and Development, elaborated on the company's program while speaking to Fast Company. I'm not sure. Do you want me to read the quotations? They were in black.
You can read it. It's they're in black because these are quotations to differentiate them.
We immediately saw it as an amazing recruiting tool for us because it allows us to show athletes a path to WWE and engage with them in a way where they can learn more about it. We can learn more about them, all while working together and finding out if it's a good fit before they're even finished college or before they need to make any decisions about what they're going to do in the next stage of their life. Levesque pointed out the early results of the NIL policy and mentioned the recruitment of Isaac Agbuzan, who was a shot putter at the University of Alabama, who was part of a tryout earlier this year. When we were done with the tryout, I was like, great, let's bring this kid in now. But it turned out he was still in school. That happened right around the NIL, so we put a deal together, and he'll be way ahead of the curve because he'll be working on a lot of stuff while he's in school. Levesque also mentioned the level of deals that the company will be offering is a range that would vary among the achievement levels of different athletes. The deals might range from the lower end, which would still help them make ends meet while at school. Of course, if you're bringing in an Olympic gold medal to the table, it's a different conversation.
Mm-hmm. This is just quickly to put Isaac. Oh boy, how do you say his last name? Isaac Agbuzan. Yeah, anyway,
I guessed it.
Anyway, here's Isaac in his W Las Vegas tryout t-shirt. So apparently he's a big shot putter who has been signed by WWE. Moving on.
All right. So, that is the last one quotes there. So I do want to bring up a couple questions regarding this. First off, is this Triple H's new project? And second off, it seems like this is going to be very focused on second tier athletes. And I don't try to mean that in a negative context, but we're talking sports like amateur wrestling, shot putting, maybe track and field, sports that don't have a professional, mm-hmm. like a major league, like contract possibility. Right.
Yeah.
I think you're still going to have a football player go, let me see if I can make a training camp or let me see if I get drafted. And then think about going to WWE. I think it's going to be hard for them to get like football players and basketball players for sure.
Yeah. I'm sure that's the way they feel about it. And that they know what they're doing as far as that. Football players who can be professional football players are going to want to be professional football players if that's viable for them. And we'll probably continue to see the Baron Corbins of the world who wash out of an NFL team and come to WWE. This is shaping up to be kind of what we thought it would, in that WWE is going to be a land of athletes and people with other maybe professional backgrounds. It's interesting to see, and I guess there were some signings out of the Las Vegas tryout, and I should look into who they signed. Sounds like mostly men, though. Obviously, there are women who are college athletes that they could sign here too. But then again, if we're talking about professional leagues, there aren't as many professional sports opportunities for women, I suppose. So maybe there's even more availability here. We'll see how it plays out. I'm interested to see if any independent talent gets signed by WWE going forward. When I say independent talent, I mean independent wrestling talent. Anybody with a pro wrestling background. And if not, if that's really what they do and they sort of double down on this notion that they're not wrestling and that they would prefer even talent that don't have wrestling experience because they wouldn't have to unteach them bad habits or they could just totally indoctrinate them into their way of doing the business. Is that a good idea? Something that I meant to put in the slides here, but I didn't. Roman Reigns has made comments to the effect of, I think was he on Jimmy Fallon or something like that? He's made a few comments. Some of them have been sort of hinting to it on air too, on SmackDown, that, that maybe an acting career is on the horizon for him, and who knows how long he'll be with WWE going forward. I don't think Roman Reigns is going to leave WWE anytime soon, but we may be coming to the point where he's roughly my age. He's like 36 or something like that. And so he's not in his 20s. And he's by far the biggest star for WWE who's a full-timer. Google Trends, that we'll talk about later, support that by a wide margin ahead of everybody else. He's not somebody who had an independent wrestling background, certainly. He is from a wrestling family, though. He had a football background. So I guess my point is, if Roman Reigns were to leave and go the way of John Cena and The Rock, the star power would be lessened for this company. I sort of see Roman Reigns as somebody who's not as big of a star as John Cena was at his peak as a full-timer, but still WWE's biggest full-time star by far. And it's in some ways you could call Roman Reigns their last star. I wonder if we're going to see a WWE in future years, especially if Vince McMahon continues to do well with his health and continues to be the head of creative. I feel like if Roman Reigns leaves WWE, they're in an even more vulnerable position. But then again, how much does Roman Reigns really add to WWE's economic picture when you take him out? They did take him out, or he sat out for all of March 2020 through August 2020. Ratings did go down quite a bit. So maybe his absence did have a negative effect, and the Thunderdome and Roman Reigns coming back had a positive effect to TV ratings. Then again, they also had a positive effect to Raw, which he didn't appear on. So it's a cloudy picture as to whether, to what degree Roman Reigns is really important to their economic picture, and whether or not WWE will be more vulnerable or their business will be more weakened without him around.
I just want to point out too, John Cena was about 38, 39 when he was starting to appear in a lot of mainstream movies. I'm not counting The Marine, any of that stuff. Like when he was doing Blockers and Trainwreck and movies like that, it was around 2014, 2015. So,
yeah, I guess what the situation that to be totally pessimistic, so this is not what I believe is going to happen, or not what I'm predicting, but I could, the worst case scenario here is WWE takes all of its focus off of talent with a pro wrestling background, cedes all of that talent to AEW or any of its, I don't want to say competitors, but other wrestling companies, doesn't create new stars, doesn't have the creative leadership and vision to effectively create new stars. Roman Reigns goes off to the movies and becomes a part-timer, just like everybody else has, who's, whether it's John Cena or Brock Lesnar, The Undertaker, et cetera, shows up for a WrestleMania or a SummerSlam. And they have a lot of talents who are, who are great college athletes, but are not necessarily well equipped to be pro wrestlers, probably big wrestling fans, but not necessarily, highly experienced and well suited to be excellent pro wrestlers on the highest stage, while ceding all that talent to others, including AEW, who continues to, we'll get into this later, but gain ground with a wide margin between AEW and WWE, but continues to compete in more and more noticeable ways, while WWE perhaps loses value and doesn't have the talent to replenish its talent pool and to continue to become a powerful and popular brand. A pessimistic view.
We do have a couple of questions from MJ in the chat that I think are good. Question is, do you see WWE never wanting to have another single star and go with an everyone at the same level of mediocrity while the brand trumps all? And then he had a follow-up question too with that. Every single starter they create has diminishing returns with getting over, so why keep running this playbook?
Well, I don't think WWE or Vince consciously, I think, yes, they consciously want the brand to be extremely strong, and to their credit, they succeeded at that. But I don't buy this idea that they don't want anybody to get over. They just want the brand to be the star. I think Vince McMahon has put tremendous energy into trying to make Roman Reigns a massive star. I think the last 5 years of their TV program show that. They would like Roman Reigns to be a much bigger star and a much more popular star, and many of their economic levers would be doing better because of it. He'd be a better merchandise seller. People would be more apt to watch the TV program. People would be more apt to subscribe to the WWE Network or to Peacock. they would have better TV ratings, and perhaps they'd be able to negotiate even better TV deals. So while they do have a weird relationship with their talent in terms of they don't seem to want to let their talent have too much control. Don't get a Twitch. Don't do a cameo. We want that to be through us, and we want to control everything that you do. That's in your contract. But I do think Vince wants to create stars. He just, there's a lot of insecurities and weird things about what Vince wants and how Vince wants you to get over in the way that he wants you to get over, not in some other way that the crowd decides. So, this, among other things, compromises their ability to cultivate stars who are very popular and can drive economics. But I agree with something else that MJ said is about lowering the talent costs too. I don't think they want to. I think we don't have any real numbers about this, but my belief is that the cost of talent per talent has gone up over the last few years since AEW has gotten involved. So I think part of this strategy, one of the factors here is that let's not compete for this talent with AEW and other players in the wrestling world. Wrestling is dumb anyway. We're not wrestling. We're sports entertainment and media. We're going to go with this other section of talent that they're not going to compete for. And then we won't be competing over the same people and bidding up the cost of talent. So it's, and in their own subjective world, it makes sense because Vince ends up not liking those kinds of people anyway. They're just, short people who ended up being in their 30s by the time they get to Vince anyway. So, he wants big athletes that he can shape, and he can take all the credit for. He can be the one who created them, and people can't point to success that they had along similar lines in a similar business where they can say, well, really he was, or she was cultivated over here, even if it's in NXT with Triple H. I think it's important to Vince's personal psychology that he's able to take the credit for being the one who made this talent.
Matthew Schroeder brings up a question. Since NXT's inception, many wrestlers how many wrestlers that were called the main roster were called homegrown talent? I don't think many. He says, what might they say about the NIL project? So I'm assuming that's where they're going to really go homegrown. This is a WWE, never been anywhere else.
Matt Schroeder and I have done a little bit of studying on that, and it's a few people. It's people that come to mind as Baron Corbin, Charlotte Flair, Nia Jax, who's now released. Those are the Alexa Bliss,
Braun Strowman,
who didn't do hardly anything in NXT, at least as far as on TV. And Braun Strowman is no longer with the company. Bray Wyatt, who's no longer with the company. Rusev, who's no longer with the company. These are the names that come to mind.
Yeah. I don't think they ever really dwelled on Bayley and Sasha Banks' independent wrestling past either. I think they kind of took credit for them as well. Same with Becky Lynch. All had experience, but yeah.
It's very much not zeros and ones. It's there are some people who had a really short indie run and then ended up in WWE, like Sasha Banks. She had a pretty short indie run. Bayley had more of an indie run. Everybody's a little bit different. When we've studied this in the past, I tried to use cage match counts, which I know are not perfect and not a complete record of all wrestling ever. But I tried to look at, like, before you made it to the main roster and all the time before you were promoted to the main roster, however we define that, which is a whole other problem. But before that time, what made up the majority of your match count? Was it matches in NXT or other developmental that was the WWE system? Or was it outside of WWE activity? And there are some people who have zero pre-WWE experience, and then there are others who are anywhere in between. But there are not that many cases in the last 5 years or so of wrestlers who fit the categorization of somebody you could really call pure and homegrown. But there are some: Alexa Bliss, Flair, Charlotte Flair, Baron Corbin, Nia Jax, Braun Strowman. I suppose Bray Wyatt, though Bray Wyatt was with the company before the PC was built. But yeah, and certainly others.
Roman Reigns and Big E too.
Right,
they're early NXT.
It depends when you want to start the clock here. I mean, they were. Often when I have this discussion, we kind of start the clock around July 2013 because that's when the PC opened. But those are definitely examples of wrestlers who didn't have much, if any, experience in wrestling before they came to WWE, Big E and Roman Reigns.
I'll ponder this question before we move on. Is Roman Reigns really the prototype of a Vince McMahon wrestler? Think about it. He's tall. He played college football.
Yes.
He's a second generation wrestler.
Yes. Look at his hair. Oh, look at him. Let's see here.
All right. We're going to move on to some YouTube data here. And you've actually been tracking the views, Brandon, for the last week as far as YouTube videos that came out between WWE and AEW and where they stack up.
So this is just the last 7 days. We might do this on a recurring basis, but let's just here's an example. These are the 20 videos on the WWE and AEW YouTube channels that after 16 hours had the most views. The top six slots are all WWE videos. The number one by far, almost doubling the next video, is Brock Lesnar attacking Sami Zayn to face Roman Reigns from SmackDown this past Friday. After that, we've got the top 10 highlights of SmackDown, the Miz and Maurice angle with Edge, the top 10 moments of Raw, another angle between Brock Lesnar and Sami Zayn, which is probably the angle that opened the show on SmackDown, the other one being the one that ranked number one being probably the angle that happened later in the show. I did kind of watch SmackDown this past Friday. Number six is Team Liv versus Team Becky Lynch. And then number seven, we have the first AEW video with just over 500,000 views after 16 hours, which is Cody Rhodes setting himself on fire for the business in the street fight from this past Wednesday's Dynamite. People watching the video can see the rest of them. We don't need to go through all 20. But this is something I'm working on. I did get some feedback from Matt. So I'm going to... I've rewritten... So my idea here, if you can't tell, was to... Once the video has been online for 16 hours, so everybody has the same amount of time. Each video has the same amount of time to collect views, look at it. So everybody's kind of in a fair position relative to everybody else here. It looks like it's the case, though, that after 7 days, that's where the view counts for YouTube views really bottoms out. So what I'm going to try to do, and I've written a script that's doing this on a recurring basis right now, every 8 hours, is collecting the view count for every video that shows up on WWE and AEW's YouTube channel. So every 8 hours for the following 7 days, it will record the view count. So we will collect this data. The great thing about data is that once you allow time to pass, lots and lots of data gets collected. So we'll look at this. It'll take at least 1 week to get a good look at what this other way of collecting data will provide us with. But it's kind of like DVR viewership, right? And which we're going to talk about. Maybe we should talk about next because we've hyped this up so much. A lot of the viewership happens very quickly, just like on TV. But then there's still viewership being collected for about 7 days or so. So, yeah, we'll see. I'm, one of the great things about the internet is there's lots of public data out here, data that is not even meant to be data, but... If we can create automated ways to collect this data, we can hopefully get some meaningful insights.
All right. Yeah. Well, if you want, let's do that, Brandon. Let's actually go to, we'll go back to, we'll do Google Trends after this, but yeah, let's go to the DVR. Cause it's, we have them now. We have DVR numbers. And what story did it tell?
It's like, this is like, an old school Madison Square Garden event where we put Hulk Hogan on in the middle. So we're going to use, just to lay out some terminology here and some jargon here, so everybody knows what we're talking about. We're going to talk about at least two different kinds of metrics. We're going to talk about this over the various demographics that people may be familiar with, but mainly we're just going to focus on total viewership and 18 to 49. But just so everybody's clear on the terminology that we're using here, you're going to see here and hear us say live plus same day a lot. Live plus same day is just the viewership that you're used to hearing about, that I talk about all the time. It's the viewership that is counted by Nielsen and reported by Showbiz Daily or by me as this is what the viewership was last night. That's the regular old-fashioned viewership, live plus same day. If you're watching on video, you'll see it abbreviated as L plus SD. You'll see that on the screen. And then there's the DVR viewership, which we'll be referring to as live plus 7 day. This is all of the viewership, the live plus same day viewership, plus all of the DVR slash delayed viewing for the following 7 days. So all the DVR. The DVR viewership is the live plus 7. That's all of it added up. Not the difference that was added, but all of it together. We will talk about what DVR viewership is, though, in terms of a percent, which is what we're going to do right now. So here I have, we're going to talk about total viewership first, and then we will talk about the demo. So this is total viewership on the screen right now. For what is the percentage of the total viewership that is DVR viewership over 7 days? So we have a pretty good idea of what live plus same day viewership is. SmackDown is the most viewed wrestling program on television. After that, it's Raw by a thin margin. After that, it's Dynamite. After that, it's usually NXT lately. And then after that, it's Rampage, although Rampage does much better in the demo than NXT does. And then well below all those is Impact. So here I have it averaged by month. And what we see is AEW, this the main takeaway I have here, is that AEW programs generally have more DVR viewership by percentage than WWE programs do. In the case of Dynamite, before the Wednesday Night War ended in April, their DVR viewership percentage was higher, and it's diminished somewhat, but still in this November, the November row that you're seeing here is not a complete month. There's at least one data point still to come. But let's look at October, the most recently completed full month that we have data for. 18% was their DVR plus 7 viewership, whereas NXT was 13%, Raw was 16%, SmackDown was 14%. But you can understand why during the Wednesday Night War it might have been higher, because some people may have been choosing to watch NXT live rather than Dynamite, and then maybe we're catching up on Dynamite later on DVR. In the case of Rampage, it's quite high. In August, it was 32%. In September, it was 39%. In October, it was 47%. Almost half of the viewership in October of Rampage was via DVR. and then so far in November, it's 31%. And why does it make sense, Chris Gullo?
It's a late night program.
It's a late show.
Friday at 10, you know, I mean, yeah. So people are probably watching Saturday morning. I've watched it Saturday morning.
There you go. Yeah, I'm not sure, by the way, I'm sure people are wondering, I'm not quite sure how all of this, what kind of viewership may be counted as DVR through the, we imagine surely through the traditional DVR set top box, this is being counted. But if you watch it later through some sort of app, or I would watch it through Sling, where I have all these programs recorded through Sling, that's probably being counted. If, at least if I'm in Nielsen home, it would be, but yeah. Impact, we're probably only going to talk about Impact in terms of total viewership. I do have all the demos for Impact, but I feel like it's so volatile with all the other demos because it's not the total audience. So we're dealing with a very small sample, and I feel like there's a lot of artificial volatility here. But anyway, we do see something that appears to be consistent with Impact, which is, you know, 20% or a quarter, sometimes as much as a third of their viewership is DVR. So, in October, it was 21%. In July, it was as high as 34%. So Impact's percentage of delayed viewing is higher than even Dynamite's is lately. Not as high as Rampage with its late night time slot, but higher than Dynamite and higher than any of the WWE programs. Interesting in the case of NXT that their DVR viewership in the... I only have this year to date, so I don't have this going back before January 1st, 2021. But during the Wednesday Night War, which was of this year, January, February, March, and half of April, NXT had a lower percentage of DVR viewership. I haven't put a lot of thought into how to read that, but I guess people who were watching Dynamite is one way to read it. People who were watching Dynamite live instead of NXT maybe were not making as much of a point to watch NXT later on delayed viewing. So just to read the numbers, in January, 19%, in February, 18%, in March, 19%. It does go down a little bit in April to 16%, in May to 15%, goes up in June to 19%, and it's been between 10% and 15% after that. So quite low. In the incomplete month of November, it's at 10%, which is the lowest in that month of any of these six programs. I could infer a narrative on that of, you know, people are not making sure that they're not missing the program. It's kind of similar. It's very comparable percentage, actually, to SmackDown. If you look at SmackDown here, which is on the screen right now, where SmackDown's DVR percentage of viewership was 11% so far in November. Again, we're missing 1 or 2 weeks out of November. But SmackDown is under 20% in all of the months so far of 2021. Raw also under 20%, but closer to 20%. More so in the high teens. More so in the teens, whereas SmackDown is more along the lines of 15%. This is total viewership. And by the way, just to visualize this, this is taking all of those monthly averages and putting them on a line graph here, if you're looking at this on video, and you see Rampage just in a different universe as far as DVR viewership by percentage. So there's that. We should be able to talk about how this looks like in terms of actual viewership. As I'm being texted about absolute numbers, we'll look at that in a moment. So just to look quickly at the key demo, is there a big difference in the demo between these? I've got these two tables here. This in, with the green heading is the demo where, I don't know, Dynamite is 22% in November. It's 19%. So I don't see huge differences here between the demo and total viewership. Maybe we would find them if we looked more closely. And these are the two line graphs. I took Impact off of here because it was all over the place. So we're not looking at Impact in the demo. But this is the line graph for the demo. Again, Rampage in another universe here. Dynamite usually above the rest, but in September and October was much more comparable to Raw and SmackDown. NXT in this 2.0 era after, you know, September and afterward is sliding below the rest. And it's not as pronounced in total viewership, right? Where it's very much more in line with SmackDown, NXT is when we just look at total viewership. So let's see here. These are the actual numbers of the most recent weeks. So you'll see here, we have blanks here for the final week of November. Not for Dynamite, actually, though, but it's just sort of the way the dates go. So these are the actual numbers. I don't know what we're really going to say about them real quick here, other than recite numbers. What I should do is, I should write a report about this and put it up for patrons, share some of this information publicly on Twitter as well. So I'll plan on doing that, if not later today, maybe tomorrow. Because I don't just want to get into audio here or video where I'm just reading a bunch of numbers. But what we're looking at here is Dynamite, Raw, and SmackDown. And then over here is NXT and Rampage. Some things that did jump out to me when I was looking at this, though, is we have TV rating scandal here. Chris Gullis, as an AEW shill, has been trying to suppress this news for months, but we've uncovered it now. So the games are over, Chris Gullis. So as people may know,
people in the Facebook groups called me an AEW shill, an AEW mark.
So as people may know, Dynamite has never come close, really, to Raw in total viewership. But there are two occasions where Dynamite essentially tied, slightly exceeded Raw in the demo of 18 to 49. Those weeks were the first 2 weeks of September. For Raw, they were the first 2 weeks of September. Raw was going up against college football before the NFL season started in the first week of September. And then in the second week, it was going against the first night of Monday Night Football of the season. And in those weeks, live plus same day was 681,000 for Dynamite, 678,000. So 3,000 higher for Dynamite that week. And then 574,000 for Dynamite in the following week, 556,000 for Raw on the Monday before it. So Dynamite beat Raw live plus same day. My phone is blowing up with texts here as I'm revealing this information. So sorry if I sound distracted. But if we go to the DVR viewership, and it kind of makes sense, right? Maybe you were watching the football game and then you were catching up on Raw later. Raw, on that first week of September, actually it was August 30th, for Raw, and it was September 1st for Dynamite. So this is the week before the All Out pay-per-view, before Danielson and Adam Cole debuted. With the DVR viewership, let's highlight the row that I'm talking about here. Raw did 799 viewers in delayed viewing, and Dynamite did 771. So again, live plus same day, Dynamite beat them by 3,000 viewers. But when you add in the DVR viewership, Raw beat it by, what is this? 8 plus 10 plus 9, whatever 799 minus 771,000 is. So by several thousand, by a couple dozen thousand viewers, small margin, but by a margin, Raw did in fact beat Dynamite when you count the delayed viewing. And then the following week, when again Dynamite edged out Raw by, what is this, 8,000 viewers, if you add in the DVR viewership, they were tied, 692,000 viewers in the key demo. So live plus same day, yes, Dynamite has beaten Raw twice. Live plus seven, though. Live plus seven. Raw has still never, before 2021, maybe in December, it's different. I don't know what happened in December. I don't have all that data for pre-2021. If anyone who has a Nielsen subscription or has that data would like to share it with me, feel free. But Raw in 2021 has never been beaten by Dynamite when you count DVR plus 7. So there's that.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get one-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
I think we kind of touched on this, that yes, Dynamite DVR viewership by percentage did go down after the end of the Wednesday Night War. And then during the preemptions, I thought this was remarkable too. How much DVR viewing was happening when Dynamite was preempted out of its normal time slot. So that would be, we can filter this out and I'll make this bigger in a moment so people can actually see it. So these are all of the preemptions for every show so far that has been preempted so far this year. And we'll look at total viewership first. Oh dear. Let's see. So if we look at the delayed viewing, which is this column right here, this is that time between late May and late June when, Oh, we gotta look at a different way of displaying this here so you can see all that. There we go. So when AEW Dynamite was preempted because of the NBA playoffs, right, in late May and throughout June, their DVR viewership by percentage was in most cases more than half of the total viewership. 58%, 75%, 62%, 63%. I'm reading numbers. This is the best part of WrestleNomics. And then in the last week was just 46%. So that brought their total viewership, which measured live plus same day, at, you know, 500,000 viewers. The last week, which was the Saturday night, not the Friday night. By the way, this is where they were being moved to Friday at 10. And the last week of that string of preemptions, they were moved to Saturday at 8, where the viewership performed better because, you know, it was in prime time. So it was probably a better time slot. But anyway, they were doing about 500,000 viewers in those Friday night preemptions, sort of testing out the Rampage time slot. If you add in the DVR viewership, they did, you know, in most cases, over 800,000 viewers, or very close to 800,000 viewers in the case of this one example from June 11th. So suffice to say, they did numbers that were close to what their live plus same day numbers were at the time in their normal time slot. Not what they would be doing with DVR viewership in those normal time slot weeks, but close to what they had been doing live plus same day when you added in the delayed viewing. And these percentages are much higher than what NXT did when it was preempted to Sci-Fi, which was just its sort of normal 15% or so, higher than what SmackDown did when it was preempted to FS1. On the two occasions that it was preempted to FS1, where it did 15% and 7% DVR viewing. And then again, when Dynamite was preempted to Saturday, why was it preempted again? Because of hockey, right? Because of the first hockey games?
But, you know, I believe so, if I remember correctly.
Yeah.
It's hockey, yeah.
29% in the first week on October 16th, and then 60% on the second week. Totaling both of those numbers to over 900,000 viewers. So there's that. I imagine we will see something similar if we look at the demo, where it's well over 50% in the string of spring preemptions. NXT is higher than it was in total viewership in the demo, with 22%, 33%, and its Sci-Fi preemptions, 26% and 13% for SmackDown's two FS1 preemptions, and then 31% and then a much higher 67% for the October preemptions. There's that. Okay. I have all of this data going all across all the demos, which is just a ton of data. So there's that. To quickly look at median age does not change that much when including the DVR viewership. It barely changes, is what I took away. So there's that. Yeah, I don't know if you have any thoughts or questions to share there. If you want to make people really mad, I can show you this graph. I've taken it away, apparently. But I think I can put these data points back on, maybe not. Anyway, This is what the graph looks like for total viewership when we include in the dotted line here the plus seven viewership, where even when adding in the DVR plus seven viewership for Dynamite across all this time year to date, it doesn't quite approach the live plus same day total viewership for Raw. It's kind of trivial, but if we looked at this in terms of 18 to 49, it's a big mess of overlap. But Raw still is above, and in one case equal to, Raw, never below. Raw, never below Dynamite. Anyway, at least in 2021.
I'm very excited that we now have this data for the future. It seems like, you know, and I'm very like,
I wouldn't count on having this data in the future, but it's
okay.
But I do have,
you know, you had now, but you're not sure we'll have it in the future. All right. I'm very interested to see how, like, and there's no way to track this, but how YouTube really kind of cuts into DVR viewership. And I mean that in aspect of moments, right? So CM Punk's promo that obviously did very well on YouTube when he came back. Maybe DVR viewership would have been more up if it wasn't put right out on YouTube and all that.
I don't know. I mean, that's the thing that on its surface makes sense. I don't know how much I really believe that. Like, that certainly if there was no YouTube, if we lived in 2004 when YouTube didn't exist, the only way to get video of that stuff, if there wasn't internet video, would be through your television. And DVRs existed in 2004. I guess it would have to be higher. But on the other hand, I think somebody who decides they're going to watch a program on DVR is probably going to watch most of the program. There's, as George Barrios taught us all, there's the lean in experience where maybe you're watching something on your phone. And then there's the lean back experience where you're going to watch something on your TV set because you have 2 hours of time here. So I'm kind of skeptical about media cannibalization. I'm sure it's happening to some degree, but I think it's mostly overestimated.
All right. Well, we're going to switch gears. It is a new month, which means we have November numbers for Google Trends.
Google Trends. Yes. So I threw this together. We're just going to look at the top 24 worldwide and the U.S. We'll look at personalities first. This will only show us personalities related to WWE and AEW. I did include New Japan people in this, but nobody from New Japan made the top 20. Roman Reigns is number one in November by a really wide margin. What's 58 divided by 17, Chris Gullo? 58 divided by 17 is almost 3.5 times. So almost 3.4x is the answer. So Roman Reigns, on a worldwide basis, at least according to Google Trends, in its algorithmic wisdom, Roman Reigns, 3.4 times greater in web search volume in November than his nearest full-time wrestling peer, Randy Orton, in this case. And then we have Jon Moxley surging way up with the news of him going to rehab, I suppose. Jon Moxley is the highest-ranked person for AEW. This was, you know, three times higher than what it usually is for Jon Moxley in this month of November. And then after that, we have Bray Wyatt. We have some released WWE talents here. Bray Wyatt, Nia Jax, excuse me, Rey Mysterio, The Miz, Becky Lynch, Seth Rollins, Sasha Banks, and then CM Punk coming in at number 11, Carmella, Kenny Omega, which was the third AEW personality here. He's higher than he was in the previous month, but comparable to where he was in September. Charlotte Flair, Alexa Bliss, the former WWE talent, Braun Strowman, Adam Page jumping up here in the month of his title win, Bryan Danielson, who's well down from where he was when he moved over, but still at number 18 here, Jeff Hardy and Asuka. I didn't include people who I just sort of subjectively, arbitrarily decided were not full-time, like John Cena and The Rock. They would rank very highly here. Dwayne and John Cena would probably rank above any of... Cena and Reigns tend to be neck and neck, but The Rock is well above anybody here. In the past, we've also had Bad Bunny in here. The most listened to artist on Spotify again this year, Bad Bunny. Barbers everywhere rejoice. So, in the United States, it's only slightly different. Most notably, we have Seth Rollins at number two when we limit the search results just to the United States. I imagine that's got to do with him being attacked by a fan on Raw. So Google Trends differences, especially when we're talking about a small, relatively small amount of time, like a month, are not always about name ID. I think generally, especially across a broad period of time, they do tell us something about name ID and perhaps popularity. But in smaller amounts of time, they tend to tell us about who's in the news, whether that's Seth Rollins or whether that's Jon Moxley here, who's number three in the United States. And then we've got Becky Lynch, The Miz, Sasha Banks, I'm always impressed that Sasha Banks is ranked more highly than Charlotte Flair. A big talking, should be more of a talking point for Sasha Banks stands out there on Twitter, followed by Randy Orton, who is number two on the worldwide list, but is only number seven on the U.S. list. So Randy Orton, a big international draw, just like Bret Hart was, I suppose. I don't know. Followed by CM Punk, Charlotte Flair, Rey Mysterio, Bray Wyatt, Alexa Bliss, Nia Jax. Nia Jax is up this month, in the month of her release. Liv Morgan, who is not on this list in on the worldwide scope. Carmella, Kenny Omega, Chris Jericho, who is not on the worldwide top 20. Bryan Danielson, and then Keith Lee in the month of his release, well above where he's usually at. So there's that.
Liv Morgan has to do with the push. They've been pushing her really hard on Raw, so.
So there's that. In terms of companies, what's the web search volume competition like between WWE and AEW? I have here on the screen for people who are watching on video, a line chart showing the entire timeline that AEW has existed, which is January 2019 through the present, the most recently completed month of November. And we have, so we're never talking about absolute numbers, unfortunately. When it comes to Google Trends, they do not make absolute numbers available to us. They only give us relative data. So I've done a bunch of stuff with Python to try to enhance the granularity and to allow us to put more than five items on it on a chart at once. But anyway, the relative values, these are relative values. In November, WWE was at a 219 to AEW's 52. So about four times the search volume WWE had versus AEW, four times the search volume of AEW. AEW is down by about half from its peak in September, coming off the debut of CM Punk and including the debut of Bryan Danielson and Adam Cole in September, where they were at 100 and WWE was at 206. So where in this month, WWE is four times AEW. In September, they were only two times, but that was clearly a peak month where AEW had exceptional interest because of the debut of new talent. And then it's sort of normalized back to where it was in July. Equal, in fact, according to this, where it was in July. That's worldwide. And the margin, I actually don't have United States right here. I'm realizing that these are the exact same chart. So this is not United States. This is worldwide. But we can talk about companies. And people are probably saying, well, why pick on WWE here? Don't you know that all metrics are down for everybody across time? And is it really fair to think that the decline of WWE web search, for whatever that's worth, obviously web search does not drive revenue, but maybe it is reflective of something meaningful. Isn't it the case for other sports that those other sports leagues are also seeing similar declines like WWE is? By the way, the grand story across the years of WWE Google web search, both in the United States and worldwide, is really one of consistent decline from 2016 to the present. If you compare this to other sports leagues, though, and maybe COVID's a factor here, if you compare this to other sports leagues, we do see big dips, for example, for the NBA. Big dip during 2020. But the NBA surged right back up, and it's at its all-time high here, apparently, so far in 2021. Premier League at an all-time high. So we see a lot of growth here across all these different kinds of sports leagues. Across this broad course of time, we even see UFC hold pretty consistently, and now has, you know, WWE has fallen to the point where UFC now surpasses WWE. The NHL in this year is surpassing WWE, whereas that was not the case until this year. So there's that. NASCAR is the one league that we have on this chart that is still well below WWE. Formula One, big growth, coinciding with the timing of Drive to Survive, the Netflix docuseries. See La Liga growing in Google web search volume. The NFL down in 2020, and now not at the point where it was in 2018, maybe not even 2019, but it's here. This is worldwide. So if people are wondering in sort of a broader sports conversation, what's the most popular sport in the world, sports league in the world? Google web search, as we just kind of noted, it's not necessarily equal to popularity, but maybe it tells us something about popularity. And I think it does tell us something about name ID when it's looked at over a broad course of time. And maybe it's the Premier League. Premier League appears to be by far the most searched for league among the leagues that we're currently looking at. Maybe I'm forgetting some league here, but Premier League is by a pretty wide margin more popular, but has more search volume than any of these other leagues, including the NBA. The Indian Premier League, the Cricket League, has exploded in Google web search volume from about 2015 and onward. So where it's at number three here, followed by La Liga, the NFL, Formula One, MLB, and even WWE here was in the 2010s above Major League Baseball, and has fallen below. Again, this is worldwide. Do you have something?
Yeah. So also too, most of these leagues that you mentioned just recently signed giant TV rights deals, and every news source like Sports Illustrated and ESPN and all that are reporting it. And, you know, people are like, oh, what is this? What is that? Oh, what is the deal? I find that might be a contributing factor. This year, a lot of these leagues made news other than, to the common sports fan,
Yeah, it's definitely something that's reflective of big news stories. I would speculate that a lot of this increase, this is purely speculation. I would speculate for WWE, where we see, if people are watching on video, you'll see a nice gradual increase from about 2013 and then peaking in 2016 for WWE. I would speculate that's got to do with the W Network, and a talking point for them right now with Peacock is that we have a wider reach than ever for the W Network content and for the pay-per-view content, which is true. The advent of the WWE Network in 2014, it was introduced in February 2014. This is my personal experience, so maybe I'm just prone to projection here, is that people started watching all the pay-per-views, whereas that was not the experience for a lot of people before the network came out, right? Maybe they saw a few pay-per-views a year, if that. Maybe they watched the TV and never watched the pay-per-views, but the pay-per-views became much cheaper to access. And you had all the other content, and I took an interest in WrestleNomics in 2014, so that was my personal experience, and then the web search volume coincides with that, for whatever that's worth. That's worldwide in the United States. If you're wondering what the most searched for leagues are in the United States, the NFL is by far number one. Well, not by far; it's close to NBA. They measure at a relative value of 46 in 2021. The NFL does to the NBA's 41, followed by Major League Baseball. All this follows intuitions, right? That I perceive the NFL as the most popular sport in the United States by far. Television viewership bears that out. The NBA is next. Baseball is after that. As far as team sports, then I perceive the NHL to be after that. But the number four most searched for sports league among these that I've arbitrarily selected here, not the NHL, not even the Premier League with its new TV deal, but UFC gradually on the rise here. Not as high as it was in the heyday of Ronda Rousey and Conor McGregor back in 2016, where it was higher than it is now. But UFC at about a 9, whereas the NFL is at a 46, the NBA at a 40, MLB at a 29. So far less searched for by about a third. Right, yeah, about a third than baseball, Major League Baseball, but UFC. Is UFC the fourth most popular sports league in the United States, Chris Gullo? What are your thoughts?
I agree, and obviously this is an intractable statistic, but just from everyday life, I work with a lot of males, probably between the age of like late 20s to like mid 40s, right, and. Water cooler conversation or whatever. We talk sports a lot. NFL is obviously number one. NBA is number two. And I'd say baseball and UFC are always talked about. And then everything else is kind of briefly talked about. That this matches up. I could tell you from conversations with people, UFC gets talked a lot more than the NHL and the Premier League, and just conversations of just guys talking sports.
How does WWE, how does AEW, how does wrestling fare? In your water cooler measurement?
There's a couple guys in my office that have an interest in wrestling, and they come to me and they're like, hey, did you watch this? Just because they know my background. But it's a very small percentile of the office that actually wants to talk wrestling.
Okay. So there's that. I mean, this is, again, this is something that I'm going to continue and it kind of already had been, but I've got like sort of a more automated way to track this over time. Thanks to Python. So there's that. a really quick look at what's been happening lately with live events. WrestleTix tweeted the averages for the monthly averages for AEW and WWE. WWE, of course, is doing a lot more events than AEW is. In November, WWE did 21 events, at least 21 events that WrestleTix covered, which I think is all of them. 21 events for WWE, 7 events for AEW, so that's 3 times the events. In October, 16 to 4. In September, 16 to 7. In August, 15 to 4. In July, the first month back on the road, 9 to 4. But the average attendances, again, the sum, the total attendances, of course, for WWE would be far higher. They run far more events. But the average tickets distributed, so this includes comps, these are estimates that WrestleTix is making based on looking at ticket maps on ticket outlets like Ticketmaster. But November, AEW's average was a little bit higher than WWE's. This includes house shows for WWE, whereas it doesn't include house shows for AEW. So I want to point out all the caveats. But for what it's worth, AEW averaged just over 6,000 tickets distributed in November to WWE's 5,800. WWE was ahead of AEW in October with 6,500 to AEW's 4,800. But in September, that is the other month that AEW was ahead. September, of course, included the Arthur Ashe Stadium show and the Newark show, which had quite high attendances. A 9,700 average in tickets distributed to WWE's September average of 7,800. I'm rounding up here to the nearest 100. So there's that. And in July and August, WWE was well ahead of AEW by multiple thousands. And this is showing Raw on the road. Just to note, I think the reason why I put this in the slides is I just wanted to note that in Long Island at UBS Arena, the new home of the New York Islanders, tickets distributed according to WrestleTix was 5,887. 5,887. And the like to like comparison that everyone is watching is Dynamite this coming Wednesday at the same venue, only 9 days apart. I think that's the right number of days. Again, Raw did 5,887. That's with it being Raw, and they put Roman Reigns in an advertised role. He ended up being in a dark match, but he was advertised. This is with the advertised return of Edge. Discounted tickets. There were many graphics we're seeing with 2-for-1 ticket sales and things like that out there for this event for Raw at the UBS Arena. And Dynamite this coming Wednesday has tickets distributed of 8,658. So that is nearly 3,000 tickets more than Raw. So well above. And one can infer all sorts of narratives there if one wanted to.
All right. We'll move on to a article from John Pollock at Post Wrestling. WWE has postponed 4 Canadian dates for January 2022 with the shows being moved to later in the year. The company was scheduled to host Friday Night SmackDown from the Canada Life Center in Winnipeg, Manitoba on January 21st, followed by live events in Regina and Saskatoon, Saskatchewan that weekend, and then an episode of Raw on January 24th from Edmonton, Alberta. The 4 dates have been moved to September and October of 2022. Now, WWE has issued the following statement to Post Wrestling, confirming the changes on new dates. The Friday Night SmackDown live events was scheduled for January 21st, 2022, at Canada Life Center Winnipeg is being scheduled to Friday, September 30th. The WWE Super Show live event scheduled for January 22nd, 2022 at the Brandt Center in Regina has been rescheduled to Saturday, October 1st. The WWE Super Show live event scheduled for January 23rd, 2022 at the Sasktel Center in Saskatoon has been rescheduled and will now be live on Sunday, October 2nd. And lastly, the WWE Monday Night Raw live event scheduled for January 24th, 2022 at Rogers Place in Edmonton has been rescheduled to Monday, September 26th. Tickets are currently on sale through Ticketmaster.ca, and all originally purchased tickets will be honored for the rescheduled dates. So yeah, there we actually have U.S. dates now. Friday, January 22nd, SmackDown will be at the Bridgestone Arena in Nashville, Tennessee. Saturday, January 22nd, it will be a live event at the Corbin Arena in Corbin, Kentucky. Sunday, January 23rd, we will be at the WWE will be at the Mountain Health Arena in Huntington, West Virginia. And then Monday, January 24th, Raw will be at the Huntington Center in Toledo, Ohio. I feel like a 1996 version of Superstars. Like, this is where WWE is going to be in your town.
Yes. Yes. This is Chris Gallo from the Event Center. So this is a good job of reporting from John Pollock, from our friends and media partners at Post Wrestling. Listening to John and Wei talk about this in their daily news updates that you can check out right here on YouTube on the Post Wrestling YouTube channel. And those the audio versions of those are on their Patreon as well. It sounds like this is related to concerns about travel to get to Royal Rumble on time, with Royal Rumble happening on a Saturday as opposed to a Sunday. I'm wondering if COVID had anything to do with this, if concerns about the Omicron variant, is that how you say it? The new variant of COVID maybe give them some uncertainty about crossing the border. I don't know. But yeah, interesting to note that WWE not going to, they are still going to Toronto though, right? This is, I think they're going to Toronto in this month of December. I don't know if you can check on that real quick, because they are coming here to Buffalo, in late December for house show December for their holiday 30th, tour.
Yeah.
Let's see, but there's all that.
Yeah. The 29th they're in Toronto.
Okay. There you go.
At the Coca-Cola Coliseum. See him, which I wonder if that's what they changed the Rico's name.
It's got to be. Yeah, it must be. Yeah. I think, we do have this. Big news from Warner Media.
Yep. Yeah. This is actually reported from Andrew Thompson at Post Wrestling. Roads to the Top is coming back for a second season, per a report. The season finale of Cody and Brandi Rhodes' Roads to the Top reality series on TNT aired on October 23rd. Season 1 featured 6 episodes, and according to Figure 4 Wrestling Online's Dave Meltzer, the show has been renewed for a second season. There were no additional details about the reported season renewal. The show premiered in September and took a look at the lives of Brandi and Cody as they were preparing to welcome their daughter Liberty into the world. Cody is also returning as a judge for Season 2 of Go Big Show on TBS. Rhodes headlined this past week's Dynamite in a tag match, and he'll be in action on December 1st when AEW goes live from Duluth, Georgia. A formal announcement has not been made about the renewal of Rhodes to the Top.
Yes, but according to Dave Meltzer, it has been renewed. So it was, 6 episodes? Pretty short season, which I understand is normal, especially for unscripted series. Don't call them reality series. 6 episodes. Curious to see how long this one will be. Probably more episodes, and I guess they do have they already did the birth, right? But anyway, ratings. What's that?
Oh yeah, now it's going to be the balance of being parents, and now Brandy's back wrestling. So
yes, I'm sure there will be an episode on Brandi Rhodes setting a table on fire, and Cody Rhodes' ongoing struggle with the audience. To be loved by the audience. Ratings for Roads to the Top were okay, not blow away. They were okay. So we'll see what these do. I imagine, I don't know. I don't imagine that the roads are going to be, the ratings are going to be that much stronger, but it's something that's probably good enough for their slot. And if I can get these on the screen here, not to use a different display here, but there we go. I'll make this much bigger. We can quickly remind ourselves what the ratings were. Some of these were on Wednesday night, right after Dynamite. Some of these were on Saturday night for the October preemptions. But 422,000 viewers, 443, 295, 340, 309 as a demo rating. That was total viewership. In the demo, they did anywhere between 0.11 and 0.19. So kind of NXT level numbers, I guess. Those are in the range of what NXT has been doing, or maybe a little bit lower. NXT has been doing about a 0.15 lately in the demo for some context.
All right. And we'll move on to some Fast National news here.
Affiliates this week. As far as I know, Nobody has reported Fast Nationals for Rampage.
Yep,
I've got a blank here.
We just have SmackDown news.
Yes.
Yep. Preliminary for SmackDown last night measured at 1.966 million, according to Spoiler TV, nearly identical to last week's prelim. Final last week, though, was higher than usual relative to prelim. Expect final rating reported Monday around 2.05 million to 2.15 million. That is your estimate, Brandon.
Yes. So very similar number to last week. This week did have Brock Lesnar. You think maybe Brock Lesnar would pop a rating? Was there competition that was offsetting any increase that maybe a Brock Lesnar appearance would provide? I don't know. Then again, Brock Lesnar hasn't exactly been absent from TV for months and months. He's been on TV fairly recently, but not in the last week or two, right? He's been suspended, of course, right? That's the angle with Adam Pearce. But normal rating for SmackDown, it appears. We'll get the final number, of course, on Monday, tomorrow, as we record this. Yeah, I don't read too much into it, but ratings holding up at a time when, as I've talked about this on Thursday, at a time when AEW Dynamite ratings and Rampage ratings are on the decline. Some of that in Dynamite's case is because of the West Coast thing that's happening, because NHL games are now airing at 10 p.m. Eastern, and those games have to air live. So Dynamite has been airing live on the West Coast, which means it airs earlier than prime time. Nonetheless, this past Wednesday's rating for Dynamite, this wasn't the first time that was happening. This was roughly the fourth time that West Coast feed thing was happening, and the rating was down from those recent weeks. So something happening, and Rampage hasn't exactly been doing great numbers either. Something happening with AEW ratings lately. Not sure what.
Before we wrap up, we do just have a couple of YouTube questions that were here. There was a question, a couple questions. There was a question on YouTube, actually. Do they actually know how many unique views are in the count versus just counting clicks? I would think that this is the most important info. So, you know, when people are clicking on YouTube, it's not just actually like somebody clicking it a bunch of times.
I would think views. What's the replay value? I don't think that that there would be a huge difference between unique clicks, unique people, and views. And even if there is a big difference, the value here for YouTube and for the content creators on YouTube is impressions, right? So even if, and I hope people do, even if you watch WrestleNomics, live WrestleNomics Radio 5 times today, which you should, you're still seeing the full serving of ads each time, right? So that's still, and you're seeing different ads probably every time. Maybe you're seeing some of them again, reinforcing the ad message. But as far as that value, even if you rewatch something, I think there's an added value economically. I saw someone had a question about streaming too, which is a common question.
I was going to say. Go ahead.
It depends on what you mean by streaming. If you're, I'm assuming that what's being asked about here is weekly TV streaming. So if by streaming you mean live TV streaming, which here's the jargon, vMVPDs, virtual MVPDs, which are things like Sling, Hulu Live TV, not to be confused with Hulu in general, but Hulu Live TV, YouTube TV, these streaming services that offer live access to traditional TV channels, just like a normal cable system would. Those are counted in Nielsen. What's not counted in Nielsen is if you watch Raw, SmackDown on Hulu the next day. That's not counted. AEW has no analog to that. Impact has no analog to that.
Are the network apps counted. And what I mean by that is if you watch the TNT app on Roku or the USA app on Roku or the Fox app, like on Roku, Amazon.
If you're watching live, I think so.
Yeah.
Is there an ability to watch those things on delayed viewing on those apps?
I have not seen it.
Keep yourself in the frame, Chris Cullo.
Yeah. Oh, sorry. I have not seen it. Like I will actually, you know, watch Raw on USA app, AEW on TNT app,
but live
Fox. Live. Yeah.
I think those are counted.
On those live. I don't think there is any. I don't think you can watch those on demand. I haven't found them on demand. I think the next day TNT does offer AEW, but I wouldn't be able to do it like in a couple hours after it aired Dynamite or Rampage.
Okay. I think the live viewing through the apps is counted. I think this is something we tried to find out when Nick Khan made a comment to Forbes saying, well, the viewership on the Fox app that people are using isn't counted, which when looking into it, doesn't seem to be the case. I think that viewership is counted because if you look at the Fox app, at least at the time several months ago when we looked into this, the Fox app, at least if you look in like the about section of the app, tells you that this may be reported by Nielsen, something like that. I don't know about the TNT app. If Chris Harrington is still in the chat, maybe he can, maybe he knows, but yeah.
There's another streaming question. What about the on-demand version of Dynamite offered by Sling and not off my Sling DVR? So
I'm sorry. Missed that. Say again.
So like if you watch the on-demand version of Dynamite on Sling, so yeah,
I think
would that count on the DVRs?
I think that's DVR. I believe that's DVR. I don't know this for certain, but I strongly expect that anything that is through a virtual MVPD is being counted by Nielsen, just like it would if you were watching it through a traditional MVPD cable or satellite.
Another question here. AEW's deal with TNT, is Roads to the Top added in separately to the deal or part of the deal as a whole?
I don't know for certain, but I would strongly expect that Roads to the Top is a separate additional. I believe that AEW is being compensated separately and additionally for Roads to the Top, just like WWE would be for Miz and Mrs. and when those TV shows existed, Total Divas and Total Bellas.
All right. I think that's what we have for questions there. So some very, very good questions this week. Very positive chat room.
Oh, wonderful.
By the way, as well today.
Good. Good. Chris Cullo, you now have moderator controls.
Yes.
You have the ability.
Didn't have to use them at all today.
Wonderful. People are in a much better mood in the morning than they are in the evening after the TV ratings come out. Someone is texting me saying that RTTT is separate. I'm guessing that means app replay. Also in the chat, Chris Harrington raises a good point that YouTube revenue is correlated to watch time, the time that you spend watching a video, not the number of views, which I can tell you as someone who has a YouTube channel that is generating some revenue, that's definitely what I experience. So that's all. Hit the like button if you like it. Share this video, share our content with people. We would really appreciate that. Hit the subscribe button to subscribe to us on YouTube if you haven't already. WrestleNomics now has a RTTTT does not stand for replay viewing on apps. That refers to Roads to the Top, which is a separate deal for AEW. On Discord, there is a WrestleNomics channel on the post-wrestling Discord, a newly created, freshly created WrestleNomics channel that you can interact with me there. I'm posting graphs and charts and facts. If there's, you know, something in the wrestling business news or media business news world that you would like to share with others and discuss or share with me or interact with me, go to the Post Wrestling Discord. If you're familiar with Discord, I think if you just search for Post Wrestling in your Discord app, you'll find it, and you'll find the WrestleNomics channel within the Post Wrestling Discord. So check that out. Live TV ratings talk is every Thursday evening, 5:30 p.m. Eastern. where we talk about the latest TV ratings and at all these other times across the rest of the world. And you can subscribe to our Patreon, patreon.com/WrestleNomics, where you get access to all of my almost daily TV ratings reports. You get access to the massive WrestleNomics viewership spreadsheet, where you get to see the data for yourself and do whatever you want with it, download it as a CSV, whatever you wish. You get access to the audio of the live TV ratings talk as well. You can follow me on Twitter if you want to, too. But what plugs do you have, Chris Cullo?
Just, you know, the usual Chris Cullo, Instagram, you know, Facebook, Twitter. But RTI Pod, if you haven't binged the NWA episodes, because we have a new episode coming later this month here. And it's going to be the Ring of Honor CZW angle. Ring of Honor versus CZW. And I'm very interested and very excited to cover that on our Rediscovery Indies later this month. And other than that, I'm pretty much going to enjoy the holidays as far as a announcing schedule. I do have one more show this Saturday, but that is part of a music festival and everything. It's already sold out. So other than that, it's going to be a rest and relaxation until January as far as the ring announcing schedule. So
outstanding. I have a couple weeks off coming up from my day job. So maybe I'll be able to be even more active with some of the data collection that I've been doing. But yeah, you can follow me on Twitter at Brandon Thurston, at WrestleNomics. You can go to WrestleNomics.com and see all sorts of data and resources and articles that Jason Umpresser is writing up. Thanks to the Post Wrestling Podcast Network and the entire Post Wrestling family for always supporting us and being a fantastic media business partner. Which they have been. New merchandise might be coming soon. More on that to come. There's a teaser. That's all. Thank you all for listening and watching, and we will talk to you next time. Bye.
Springtime savings are in full bloom, all in the Kroger app. Get 12 packs of delicious Coca-Cola, Pepsi, or 7-Up for $4.99 each with a digital coupon. Then get 1-pound packages of flavorful 80% lean Angus ground beef chuck for $3.99 each, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.